It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Well, thank you for listening in. This is Gary Baker. Foster Brown and Ad Riddell both have the day off, but Cal Carson is here in studio with me, and we have Justin Beale, who's actually going to help us answer some questions in the second hour. The first hour is going to be a few guests. We're going to talk about Midwest Technology Leaders Conference, Nerd Night, and Mobi Dev Days. So stay tuned. We're here for 2 hours. Well, this is Gary Baker. Foster has the day off, and so does Ed. Cal, we must have drawn the short straws or something. We're here.
Either that, or we got the good straws, one way or the other. It depends on which way you want to go with it. But of course, Foster is on a well-deserved vacation, way out west in Vancouver. And just want to let him know that I hope he's having a great time. And he can stay as long as he likes. And, he doesn't really have to rush to come back. Now, I know he's listening to the podcast, and the first thing he's going to say to himself is, he's trying to hijack me.
Yeah.
But Foster is out west. He's enjoying a well-deserved vacation out there.
And Ed is spending a little bit of time trying to help Talon, his son, with his Eagle Scout project.
So, a little father-son time always is good.
Worthy cause. So, good. So, you and I are going to talk a little bit about the tablet market. There's been some changes with some of the vendors, eh?
Yeah. I've been doing a little studying and stuff like that, and plus I had an experience in the past week or so dealing with a tablet-like computer that we can talk about a little bit later on, too, as well. But I was doing some, investigation because I was curious how things are going.
Well, you know who wants to he just can't stay away.
Who's that?
And that's Foster.
Oh, no.
So Foster is calling in from British Columbia, I believe. Foster, welcome.
Guys, how you doing? Cal, I heard what you said. Uneasy lies the crown. Seriously, guys, I just wanted to call and say I wish you well. And the marvel of electronics is that I'm calling you from about 2,000 miles west of Detroit in the middle of Vancouver Island near a bay called Buckley Bay. And as a matter of fact, I'm in the last full day of my vacation here at this particular part. Tomorrow we're going down into Victoria, but I'm going to grab my bucket and head for my new addiction, low tide and oystering.
Ooh. Can you put those on dry ice and bring them back?
I wish I could. So apparently some of the best oysters in the world come from a place called Fanny Bay, which is literally about a quarter mile from me. And so I've walked down there and I've learned the fine art of finding the oysters and then even shucking them. So now I know what shuck and jive means.
I don't think so, but...
want to take any more time up because I know you and Cal have got a great show going there.
No. You don't get off that easy. Now, listen, you may not be able to bring oysters back on dry ice, but I know chocolate travels well.
Oh, yes. This is home to Rogers Chocolate down in Victoria. Matter of fact, I'm heading down there tomorrow, and I'll be sure to bring back a little gem for you, Carl.
Wow. We do appreciate that. Now, you have to tell us, though, my guess is you're not on a regular telephone because if
well,
you were...
Today I am. The last time I called you from the airport, I was on a Skype system, and I've been using Skype to do things like call home. It's great. You have to be careful, as you know, Gary, from having traveled outside the country. You have to be very careful not to get roaming on local phone systems. Set my cell phone on the airplane mode, which means it doesn't tap into the data. And then my sister has a great Wi-Fi network, and I've been using that, for instance, to post our web page, which is up now with both pictures on it, by the way, Gary.
Yeah, thank you.
And also to call home and make great connections with Skype. So that is, that's one way of getting around for those of you who have to travel outside the country.
Well, the last time I was there about a year and a half ago in Vancouver, I had some friends that said, hey, I can just, you know, look, my phone works. I can just call. And I said, yeah, I think it's like $2. And it turned out to be like $2.35 a minute for their roaming costs.
That's
so they
exactly
were, they didn't. I'm glad we stopped them before they ran up over $100.
Oh, and easily. I've heard Leo Laporte talk about going out of the country. And even with some of the deals that AT&T, for instance, can set up for you, it can be extraordinarily expensive. Yeah. So just a tip for people, you know, if you're someplace traveling and you're not having trouble getting to your phone system, if you can get a decent Wi-Fi signal, you can use, like I'm using an iPhone, and I'm using the Skype application there, but on the Android phones as well, it works very well.
Well, I tell you, Foster, one thing that I want you to do on the way back is to think about this, and that is, what is the one electronic device that you took with you that was most needed, and what was the one that you least needed on your travels over there? Because I know you went to fully
loaded.
Good question.
I stripped down, to be honest. But let's talk about that next week when I come back in, because I don't want to take time from the show today. But that's a very good question, because I tried not to overload. And you're going to be in next week?
Sure, why not?
Okay,
I'm not doing anything.
We'll chat about it then. Ed will be back, and we should have a good time. But guys, Gary, Gal, have a great show. I just wanted to say hello to you guys before I begin my journey back east.
Thanks for calling in, and safe travels home.
Thank you. Take care.
Okay. Bye now. Well, that was nice that that Foster called in. I was going to ask him a little bit about what he thought with the new numbers coming out about the tablet market, because you've done some research, and there's been a number of changes over this last year.
Yeah, it's been flying along. A lot of people are getting into tablets when they find that it's the correct device for them, because for it's not for everybody, and it's not going to do everything for everybody. You personally know that for a fact, Gary, because you've been trying to get the tablet thing to work for you, so you only have to carry that one thing with you.
Yeah, I'd like to throw away the notebook if I could and just travel with the tablet, but not quite there yet.
You know, it's
close,
funny because more and more people that are in the field that are, you know, doing IT on a regular basis for their lifestyle and that sort of thing, they're all saying the same thing. You know something? I can't do it all on one device or the other, so I'm taking both, but I generally get the thinnest, lightest sort of laptop I can get a hold of and my tablet, and I take them both with me. But it appears that, somebody called Microsoft's making something called Windows 8, and they actually have, are you ready for the drum roll, 7.4% of the market now.
Amazing.
So it is growing there.
It is.
It is growing for them.
And that's according to Gizmodo.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, it sure
Which
is.
Which does a fairly good job of rolling up these numbers.
And we can talk some more about that when we come back from commercial break. So if we want to get back into it, we'll do it at that time. If not, then we'll talk about something else, because it's always fun here on the Internet Advisor, right?
We may be talking about the Midwest Technology Leaders Conference that's coming up on May 2nd out at the Inn in St. John in Plymouth. So, in fact, we will, and we'll welcome Rob Palmer and Tracy Ann Palmer to the show. Cal Carson and I, Gary Baker, are holding down the fort here along with Justin Beal in the second hour answering questions and whatnot. But right now, this is something we do every year, but we talk a little bit about the Midwest Technology Leaders Conference, and we have the two people most responsible for bringing that to Michigan, to the Midwest, and keeping it going for, this is the ninth year, is that right? Rob and Tracy Ann Palmer, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show again.
Thank you for having us again. Yes, it's ninth year.
Yep. Ninth year. That's amazing. Now, tell us a little bit about what Midwest Technology Leaders is, because it's gotten bigger and better every year. In fact, we're running out of room, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, we are. So we really want to bring together senior-level IT executives to really talk about what's going on in the market, what their problems are, you know, what's keeping them up at night, and hopefully how to solve them, and bringing their peers together to figure out that they're not alone. And find out some ways that they've overcome these challenges over the past few years.
You know, and I find that the content is wonderful, but the networking, I mean, I see people there that I haven't seen since the last year, and they're people that, just like me, who say, I'd never miss one, right? I'd never miss it just because of all the people that you get to see and talk to and meet new, right? Tracy, and that's got to be wonderful. Since you started this 9 years ago, the two of you have really just, I mean, have done a remarkable job of getting the right people to come to this event. How do you do that?
Yeah, so Gary, it's really about the community. You know, we're just facilitators.
You're more than that, certainly. but you're right. There's a lot of people that do help.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, it's the advisory board. It's people like you who sit on our advisory board, right? So there's a lot of people that, you know, really commit and engage. And it's because of that we get the right people in the room, and the content is king always. And so they help us really bring all that content together. But it's a community event.
Yep. And it seems fresh every year. This year is different than last year, right? I mean, we learn something new all the time. Having been part of the advisory board for a while now, you know, I know some of this, but there's a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes that even our board doesn't get as much involved in. How do you find the people and convince them they ought to do this?
Right. We do a lot of research. So we read a lot of articles. We talk to a lot of people. And then we bring it to the board and say, okay, are we on the right track or not? You know, we're not in it day to day. The board really helps us to make sure that we're on track. But we do a lot of talking with people. We go to other conferences. We try to find the most relevant, topics out there.
And you've got some help this year, right? There's another company that you've convinced to help you with this.
Right. UBM Technology, which they do about 8 other conferences a year. So we get a lot of content from them. And we get to poll people from around the country now instead of just in Southeast Michigan. Okay. So we find out what is really, on topic.
Well, this is all new for me. So my biggest question is, who is the target audience for this seminar? Who would come and see this sort of stuff that you guys have to present? And you've brought all these wonderful folks in to be able to talk about all things technology. Tell me about that.
Great question. So the first thing we do is it's an event exclusively for CIOs and IT leaders in the community. Along with that, all of the partners, right? All of the organizations that are building fantastic technology. We always try and attract those that are local so we can make sure that those partnerships are there and they're strengthened. The other piece of this is we also bring in the individuals that are trying to aspire to be IT leaders. So there's a mentoring component.
That's right.
That's part of the program as well. And last year, we actually had a young kid there. I think he was 18, 19, and he was there watching the entire event, and he walked out of there with these eyes huge, like, oh, wow, I got to spend the day with all these CIOs. How fantastic is that?
and
pretty cool.
Sometimes they're even CFOs, the chief financial officers, because they have such a large say sometimes in what a CIO and what the technology group. Just depends on the company.
Especially the budget,
yeah. So I remember last year I'm standing there in the one corner of the room with a lot of the vendors there, and we were talking. I said, okay, since last year they were here, and I bought connectivity from Comcast, and I bought and I went right around the room, and because we do, the people that come, we get, first of all, we get to spend a little bit of time with those vendors, but we also take and say, okay, you've supported the IT community here in Michigan. We're going to support you. I have a choice to make between two vendors. One was a sponsor, one wasn't. It's a pretty easy decision, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, part of it is that they are showing commitment to the IT leaders here in Michigan, right?
And that's why why we did that back then. That's why we started it 9 years ago, to get that community, to get people buying from companies in Michigan or that support this area. And it's really been a fantastic community lately.
So we're talking to Rob and Tracy Ann Palmer, and we're talking about the Michigan Technology Leaders Conference. So when is it? Where is it? We're linked from our site, our page at internetadvisor.net, so they can click right off. They see Rob's smiling face, and they click right off to the event. But people that are driving or aren't going to go to our page to look at this right away, where is it, when is it?
It's May 22nd.
Okay.
At the Inn at St. John's in Plymouth. It's the second year we're having it there.
And us from the west side of the Detroit metro area love that location.
It took you 7 years to get it out
right,
that
it
way.
Did.
But it's there, and it's been fantastic. Everybody loves it out there.
Excellent.
Yeah. And it starts at 7:30 in the morning's registration. We have a very full lineup of fantastic speakers that we're flying in from Austin, New York.
And we always end the event with cocktails.
I was just going to say that. How do you keep us all there? I was going to tee that one up for you, Tracy Ann. How do you keep us all there till the end, right?
Well, this year we've actually scheduled the CIO panel at the end. Mm-hmm. And right before that, we have a keynote, Andy Karabutis from Dell, is coming back into town. So we're very excited to hear what's been going on with her since she became CIO of Dell.
She was my my client when I was at EDS and she was at GM. I worked for she managed global purchasing and supply chain, and so I spent a great deal of time with Andy, and still keep in touch. So it'd be good to see her again.
Yes,
but there's others. Who else?
So we have Larry Bonfante from the United States Tennis Association, which we're really excited to have him. He does some contributing for CIO Magazine, but he's got a whole way of talking about the new influences of a CIO. So that's going to be very interesting, and also Ron Utterbeck. Which he is going to be speaking.
So Ron will be a great speaker as well. But the CIO role has changed quite a bit, right?
Significantly.
And as it changes, I mean, you've seen this change over the last 9 years, and the conference has changed because of that. Mm-hmm. Do we have any CMOs, chief marketing officers, any coming?
There's actually two. That are coming. Because of the connection between the CIOs and CMOs recently, we've started to widen that out a little bit. And we're trying to find out which CMOs are working with the CIOs in more detail, throughout the process.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, the CIO is now a contributor to the business, right? Not IT in the back office, contributor to the business. And with technology going towards the consumer, marketing, the social media, the CMO and the CIO play really pivotal roles within the organizations because of that.
Yeah, the whole IT group has changed because there was at one point you said IT and people went, oh, those are the guys that deal with the routers and the networks, and that's not quite true. Whatever you call it, the technology group and the people within each company that deal with technology have so many more things they have to pay attention to today, from social networking to – and then, there's still the problems around security. I know that we always are concerned about security. There's somebody always talking about that, right?
Yep, and we're bringing a lot of CSOs, chief security officers, as well.
Good. Well, we're talking to Rob Palmer, Tracy Ann Palmer. Thank you again for coming, little bit about the Midwest Technology Leaders Conference. You can get to that site by just going to internetadvisor.net and clicking right off and finding all of the information out around Midwest Technology Leaders. Thanks again for coming in. Well, welcome back. We were just talking in the last segment about the Midwest Technology Leaders Conference for IT leaders, CIOs, the people that don't really do the work. Now we're going to talk to Amber Condo. Amber and I first met when she came to Cengage Learning to Gale to help us out there. But Amber, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm glad you could come because while we were talking about IT leaders and CIOs and the people that don't actually do the work, we want to talk to you about some really cool organizations that have been started here in the area with people that actually – or for people that actually do the work. And one of them is Nerd Night. Tell us about Nerd Night. You helped start this.
So Nerd Night actually as an organization is internationally in over 50 cities. It actually started in Boston and New York. The latest two chapters are Ann Arbor and Detroit.
And you helped start both of them?
Yeah, yes. I'm one of the founders of both cities with a couple of other people. It's not just about tech, though. It's not just about software. It's interdisciplinary. So anybody who's a nerd, which we describe as anybody who's passionate enough about something to give a 20-minute talk about it.
So you don't have to be. I know that on the website, which we will link off to again, with your smiling face on our site, and then a link to Nerd Night, both Detroit and Ann Arbor, and we'll talk about the other one later. But they go to internetadvisor.net and go right to the site. On the site it says 18 years and up.
Yeah, that's just
But now,
because...
what about, like, us old guys? Can we come, too?
Oh, yeah, and up.
Okay. You don't have to be, like, really, you know, young and really smart?
Oh, no, we get everyone from all ages and all walks of life, only over 18.
Over 18. But, and one of the big draws for some people might be you get to learn, but you get to have a beer in your hand.
Yeah, so that's...
That's 21 and up. For those people.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, we've been described as being like the Discovery Channel, but with beer.
Yeah, I like that.
So do you, like, break out when you have this night? Is it, like, broke off into, like, groups and stuff like that? You like gamers and network guys and guys who are, like, you know, doing hardware and stuff? Or do you just have people come in and they talk about what their passions as far as IT?
Oh, it's all one big room. So one of the other kind of secondary goals, besides just learning something, is to meet someone you might not normally meet. So in Ann Arbor, for example, the two other, they're called the role as a boss, as an organizer. Mm-hmm. The two other bosses I don't think I probably would have met otherwise, Hadley Lord and Elizabeth Lamonti, and we're all great friends now.
So it's like an IT mosh pit.
And not even just IT, anything. We've had nanoparticles. We had somebody talking about divine sexy times from Krishna.
Ooh.
Anything you can think of.
So do you already have your program laid out, or are you subscribing for more people to come in and talk about their passions, whatever they may be?
Oh, we're always taking submissions at all times.
And so they would go to your website, and they would put in submission to be able to do that.
Yep, we've got a link to a form to submit a talk right on the site.
And you do this once a month?
Yep, monthly in each city.
Okay, so what are the days or times for Detroit first?
So Detroit in May is May 30th. It'll start at either 6:30 or 7. We haven't quite orchestrated that part yet.
Do we have a location?
Yes, it'll be at the Tangent Gallery, which is the same place that this one just on Thursday was.
Yep. That sounds great. And in Ann Arbor, is that on a set day?
Yes, Ann Arbor will be another Thursday, May 16th at Live, which is sometimes a nightclub. That's above our normal venue, which is The Last Word in Ann Arbor.
Oh, very cool. So you said that it's not only just IT, but you had particle physics, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Boy,
yeah.
We get to learn about all sorts of different things, right?
Oh, yeah, very cool. We had Charlie Wohlberg come in Detroit last Thursday talking about, like, that MBA and business implications of Dr. Seuss.
Oh, really? Isn't that's just like Charlie. Charlie runs TEDx here in Detroit and has been wonderful in plugging in on the very creative side. That's what I think of. When I think of Nerd Night, I think of, like, really creative people that are coming together because it's one of many different venues, but this one just kind of had a real appeal to me. And when I saw that you were organizing, I said, I got to get a hold of Amber and have you come in and talk about it. But these are really creative people, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. We see submissions from all kinds of cool people. I wish we could have more than three people every night.
What was the most unusual or enjoyable talk or presentation or whatever that you've seen that you've really enjoyed?
That's a hard question. Between the two cities, I've done six now. So, of course, the most recent one's always your favorite. But
of course.
We had in February, we did kind of a passion and love theme, and that was really cool. We had a neuroscientist come in talking about, like, the neuroscience of love and lust and that sort of thing. That was an amazing one. And also PJ J. Cokes from Go Comedy just came into Detroit this last time and was talking about how you make believe as a child, but then you kind of stop, and how you need to kind of get back into that because that's what's fun.
Are these kind of monthly TEDx kind of events? Because that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, very much so, but
very creative.
A little more informal and with a lot more booze.
Yeah, I like that part too.
No, is there a charge?
Yes, it's $5.
Okay.
And then open bar, or not open bar, but cash bar.
Yep, cash bar.
Cash bar. Okay. So now there's another event. There's another event coming up next Saturday, and it's all day, and it's at Cobo Hall. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Mobi Dev Day.
So this is actually the third Mobi Dev Day that's happened. It'll be the largest. It's part of the larger franchise, which is Detroit Dev Days. That's been started and are usually run by Dave McKinnon. It's an all-day mobile software developer conference, and we have speakers coming in all the way from the Netherlands and a lot of local people too, Jennifer Marsman and Jason Fallis.
Tell me about Amsterdam, because that was the one of your guests that are going to come on is coming from Amsterdam, and he's kind of world renowned, and we got him here in Detroit.
Yeah, Mike Lee, our keynoter, he is the mayor of Amsterdam.
Figuratively?
Well, that's his role.
It's remarkable because I looked on your site and, you know, just it's got to be a fun conference as well. And you're going to be talking about all things mobile?
Yeah, everything. We have iOS and Android, of course, but we've also got a strong Microsoft presence with Windows Mobile stuff that's coming up. We also have people talking about the mobile web and quite a few people talking about like craft languages that you can use on any, either for cross-platform things or like using Ruby on an iPhone or Scala on an Android phone, all kinds of cool stuff.
That's very cool. We're talking to Amber Conville. Amber and I first met at Cengage Learning when she came in to help us there and did great for us. Now she works at Detroit Labs, mm-hmm. Which is – tell us a little bit about Detroit Labs before we go on.
Detroit Labs, we're about 32 people now, right in the Madison Building in downtown Detroit. We make mobile apps that are awesome.
Some really smart people there. And,
oh,
and
yeah.
That whole building – what Dan Gilbert has been able to do to get as many really cool startup, mostly startup tech companies.
You know, you can talk about that all you want, but I'm going to tell you how he was able to do it. Have you ever gone in one of those buildings? If someone puts a bar in the middle of my office that's serving candy and ice cream, I'm going to work there too.
Okay, so I'd like that part too.
We only have slushy machines.
Oh, my heart breaks.
So, you know, just the startup, the entrepreneurial ventures that have gone on, the really cool technology that people have been developing here, this really feeds into things like Mobi Dev Day, where now you're bringing even more people together. They get to rub elbows with some really cool people, and who knows if they happen to maybe find a job here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's lots of reasons for people to come, right?
Yeah, we've got about 400 attendees right now, and tickets are still on sale, of course.
Yep, of course. Well, it's Cobo Hall, so you've got a little more room to bring even more people in. But
yep.
That's wonderful that it's gotten that big this quickly, the third year.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the obvious, you know, the iOS, the Android platform, stuff like that. Is there a big contingent of people involved with this in the open source community?
So what I've found is that a lot of people who are coming to Dev Days in general tend to be more of the polyglot type of people who, I mean, of course, you do client work that is all closed source, but they all are contributing to open source all the time.
Cool.
Wonderful. And, you know, when we talk to other people that are, you know, doing really kind of cool things, because we promote a lot of the entrepreneurial ventures downtown, they point to this really vibrant community of fairly young people, not all young, but fairly young, that are just doing some amazing things. This is just all part of that fabric that's growing downtown Detroit, isn't it?
Yeah, Detroit has a really amazing community right now. And actually, Mobi Dev Day and Detroit Dev Days in general, one of the goals of it is to make Detroit, Michigan, the software capital of the Midwest, if not the entire country.
Well, thank you. And hopefully people, if you're interested, go to our site, internetadvisor.net. Go right out to either Mobi Dev Day or Nerd Night. Amber Conville, thank you very much for coming in, talking a little bit about both of these events, one ongoing every month and one next Saturday. So I appreciate you coming in. Thanks, Amber. We'll be back with Mike Brennan in just a minute. Well, this is the time of our show where we are talking to Mike Brennan. Mike is the editor and publisher and owner of MyTechNews.com. Been around for well over the last decade doing this, as well as before that as a reporter for some of the more mainstream news outlets. Mike, you are helping us out with the tech news for the week, aren't you? Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks, Gary, is Foster still AOL or AWOL or whatever?
Yeah, he's out playing on the West Coast, so up in Canada.
Yeah, well, anyway, yeah, I've been doing this. I started this in the year 2000. At that point, I was the old proverbial first mover. I had just left the Free Press where I was a tech writer, not tech columnist, and all my readers were saying, geez, why aren't you covering this? Why aren't you doing this? And, of course, I'd run it up the flagpole at management and never get done. So that was my focus group for starting MI Tech News back in the year 2000.
So you became your own management.
Pretty much, yeah. I never played nice with the other kids anyway. So, I mean, once you get the taste of being an entrepreneur, it's really hard to work for somebody. So.
You know, I had a great conversation last Monday with Matt Roush, who works for one of the other outlets here in town, who is
which
a good,
we won't name,
which we better not name, right? But he's a good friend of yours and mine, and I told him that that we were teaming up together to do this segment each week, and he thought that was a great idea, and wanted me to pass along his good wishes and to say hi to you. So,
well, no, Matt and I have known each other for a long time, and he was at Cranes, I was at the Freep, and we were sort of rivals, and then he went to that unnamed station.
Yeah, and we're still, and you're still rivals.
Still rivals, yes. So, yeah, I mean, you know, we run into each other, well, not as much as when I was an auto writer and it's like pack reporting. It's always the same reporters at the same events. I run into Matt about a half a dozen times a year these days. You
well,
know, so.
He has a lot of good respect for you. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with technology in the news here in Michigan.
Well, Esperion, old Roger Newton's at it again. Yeah. That's an interesting company. He made $1.2 billion when he sold it to Pfizer. Then Pfizer sold it back to him because big companies can't make innovative things work, right? And so now he's back at it again. He wants to describe what he's working on. He has this pill that you can take, or he hopes you can take. It's not quite done yet. That will lower your LDL cholesterol, which is the bad cholesterol. He described it to me one time as Roto-Rooter going through your veins. Mm. So, anyways, they just got a $33 million preferred stock financing together, which is a good sign. It means that they're moving forward. And when you do that, when finance people do those kinds of offerings, they're really getting this company ready for an IPO or a sale later on down the line. Roger's going to make a bunch of money again, and more importantly, he's going to put a lot of heart surgeons out of business with his new pill. It's supposed to be really, really revolutionary, and could be a really big win for Michigan.
Well, when you make $1.8 billion for your last investors, it's remarkable how the next time you want to do this, investors flock to you.
Yeah, funny thing, isn't it? Yeah. So, but Roger's a good guy. He's a real credit to Michigan. So,
and he helps a lot of other companies and a lot of other entrepreneurs here in Michigan. So, thank
you, Roger. Absolutely, good guy. Well, this weekend in Rochester, the MI Green Team is hosting the annual Green Fair. You know, where you have all these different whatever you're into. I mean, if you're into yoga, they got that there. If you want to learn how to insulate your house better or make it more energy efficient, or your business, or get one of those wind turbine deals. It's all there this weekend. Anyway, so they named the winners of their third annual Michigan Green Hall of Fame, and all those folks will be listed at my website at mitechnews.com, so you can read all about it.
Great. And you can get to your site through our site at internetadvisor.net, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, Mike, I'm looking at the webpage here right now, and I see one story on here that I want you to tell me how tech ties in with beer.
Well, yeah, that's actually near and dear to my heart because I'm going to be leaving here shortly to go to the Knights of Columbus for a polka festival and beer drinking. So, in this case, I'm not writing about that. But Pure Michigan and Founders Brewing Company have teamed up to give craft beer fans, and that's for people that like something other than Budweiser, you know, where you really get the taste of the beer and the different flavors. And anyway, they're having a contest where Michigan can pick the flavor that they should be doing next. And I'm not, again, sure how Pure Michigan ties in with this other than to show that we have great craft beer here. But so if you want to enter this contest, all the rules and regulations are at the website, and I encourage you to do so.
Well, that sounds great. I know Bell's is putting together a new brewery up in the UP. So we do have a lot of craft beers here, and you know, we obviously Nerd Night. You know, you got to drink beer there, so it must tie into technology somehow.
Well, yeah, the sense of I guess you're voting online and things like that, and It's kind of loose. I mean, it's more of a marketing and advertising promotional kind of thing. But, hey, what the heck, you know? It pays the bills, right?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So what else in tech news?
Well, speaking of Monday, we were both at the same event, but I was in the back and didn't attend the press conference. But our friends at the Michigan Council of Women in Technology had the three CIOs for the Detroit 3 automakers there.
It's amazing
and,
they had them all.
These guys were all talking about how, you know, well, they've got a pretty good sizable female staff, you know, 27-28%. But they'd like to get a lot more women in technology onto their staffs for a variety of reasons. Of course, you know, then they talked about, as we men know, women drive most of the purchasing decisions, right? You know, even on cars, 80% of the purchasing decisions on cars are driven by women in one way or another. So it's just, it would be a good idea. And then there's a lot of really talented women out there that, you know, we really need to get plugged into some of our state's major businesses because then really good things can happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about on the cyber defense front with Google?
Yeah, I was going to bring that up sort of last. That's always, you know, me, I'm always pushing my book, so I have to be careful how I do this. So, but Google has joined a group of other folks. Let me get to pull the story up here. I can read it to you exactly. I always have this online here. So they've joined a group for alternative online authentication. And so, that's always the tricky part to keep the bad guys out. Is different innovative ways that they can't figure out or do brute force, you know, hacking on or any of those other variety of things. So now Google, the 900-pound gorilla, has come on board with the Fast Identity Online Alliance, and they're going to develop standards and alternative ways of verifying your identity that fooled off bad guys, you know, so.
Boy, we need better authentication, as we all know, because if we don't stay one step ahead or at least stay even with the bad guys, bad things happen here. So,
well, that's measures good and countermeasures, and right now they're winning. I mean, we just had another report come out from cyber warfare incidences. Now, that's different from hacking, but from 2011 to 2012, there's three times as many instances of documented cyber warfare attacks, and that's aimed at crippling a power grid or, you know, an act of war, essentially. And guess who most of them are coming from? We won't name those either because I love Chinese food. So,
one wonderful way to do it. Mike, anything else?
Well, let's see. There's an NEF meeting. I know that's really near and dear to your heart,
it
Gary.
Is.
You're one of the founders of that group.
Yep.
And on May 16th in Ann Arbor, they're going to be looking at that nagging question that every new business out there wants to know is how to price your products. And so they're going to have some experts in there to talk about that very thing. Because I'm always developing new products myself, and that's always the trickiest part is you don't want to leave money on the table, right? But same time, you don't want to scare them away. So.
That's right. Hey, Mike, thank you very much. This segment really does enrich our program every week. We do it the very last segment of the first hour, and we appreciate you coming on each week and telling us a little bit about what's going on around Michigan in technology.
Oh, great. Gary, appreciate it. Ed, good to talk to you. And hopefully Foster will be back next week, right?
He will be. We hope so. We wished him safe travels home. So hopefully he will have some, and we'll see him next week. Thanks
All
again,
right,
Mike.
All right, have a good one, guys.
You take care. So that was Mike Brennan from mytechnews.com. You can go to his site from ours at internetadvisor.net. And see all the other stories, the ones we talked about and some of them that we didn't talk about. They're all there. And he does that every week and will be with us every week at that segment. So we're going to spend the next hour talking about your technology needs.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast.
Thank you very much. This is the Internet Advisor. We're here for another hour, and we're going to take your questions. So let me give you the telephone number. It's 800-859-0957. Please call us with any kind of question that you have around technology, the Internet, your computer, You could start off with an easy question. It's one that we could answer. That's always good. We'll be back with Justin Beal, Amber Conville. Well, great. This is Gary Baker with Cal Carson, Amber Conville, and Justin Beal, and we're here to answer your questions. Hopefully they're easy ones so that we can answer them. Cal, you have something to say?
Yeah. I wanted to talk about an experience I had last week with my sister-in-law. She's in the medical field. She's a doctor, and I'm very proud of her for that. But she had to get a laptop computer to work with the systems in her office. And I know a lot of times I joke about Windows 8, and I go like, yeah. But I actually had a pretty good experience with one. She decided to buy a Dell, I think it was like an XPS convertible laptop.
Ooh,
where you
could
nice flip one. The screen back when you close it up. And I got to say that it was a nice, fast laptop. It's nice and thin. But the thing that I found extraordinary, which doing a personal experience with it, was that Windows 8 on a touch screen works pretty darn good. It's fun, and it's easy to work with. I mean, you have the big icons and that sort of thing, but it actually works pretty good. As a laptop, it's a little cumbersome, but that's another story. But on the touchscreen interface, I have found that it works really good if you use the Windows key and remember three letters, D, I, and E.
So what do they stand for?
Well, if you do Windows D, it'll put you right to the desktop immediately.
Mm-hmm.
If you do Windows I, it'll give you Internet Explorer. And if you do Windows E, it'll give you Windows Explorer so you can find your files and stuff
that.
So if you remember those three keys, you can navigate that interface and it works pretty good and get you going, because one thing that interface lacks is something called a start button, and people are used to going to that to get all the things that they want to do with it. But that's a good way to be able to walk around through the interface, so that works out really well.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah, we've heard, and my son can attest to this since he has a touch screen. Windows 8 works much better with a touch screen than trying to use a mouse. So
yeah, without a doubt.
He thinks that the mouse is. I just tell you briefly. He thinks the mouse is like 50 years old. He said, that's it. That's all it's going to be. And it's 50 years old this year. He can't imagine why anybody would use a mouse.
Well, I can tell you, on some brands of computers other than Macs, the touch pads can be extremely sensitive, and it takes you a while to adjust them so they can work quite right for you. On one of my particular computers, I just turned it off completely, and I guess I'm an old guy. I feel really comfortable working with the mouse on that machine. Mm-hmm. On my Mac, the touchpad works great, and I love working with that as well. But the mouse is, I think it's going to be around for a lot longer than people giving it credit.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay, let's go out to the phones, and let's talk to Ken from Scio Township. Ken, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing great. Say, thanks for calling in.
Hello. I have a question about Firefox and an issue that seems to be with it. Is you can be downloading a web page, and midway through the download of it, it'll suddenly go over to the desktop for maybe 5-10 seconds, then it comes back to the web page you were downloading and completes it. I noticed that watching the loading process that there's an awful lot of different elements and sites they draw upon to form the completed web page, and I don't know if that is what causes that.
Yeah, this is Justin Beal. I've had a problem with that before with Firefox, and what actually ended up solving that was if I had a lot of downloads listed that were really old in my download list, because Firefox tend to keep track of all those, you can get into like a couple hundred of them, and then it keeps track of all those while keeping track of your new ones. So if you actually go and clear out your old downloads list, that actually has solved it for me in the past. Updating Firefox has solved that for me in the past, but I have had that problem a lot.
So, Ken, what version? I think the newest version is 20.0.1, if I believe.
That sounds about right.
Are you on the newest version? Do you know?
Operating system?
Right.
Windows 7.
Windows 7. How about Firefox?
I'm not at the computer right now.
Okay. So, Justin's suggestion was, that either to clear out the downloads folder or make sure, you said that if you they update it, you updated it, and that also helped. So maybe if you're not on the latest version, and they come out with new versions all the time.
And weekly.
Yeah, weekly. You by virtue of the fact that the newest one, I think, is 20.0.1, mm-hmm. they come out with them all the time. So you might want to just update.
Now, there's one other thing that you might want to take a look into, too, that I've noticed that some folks have been doing to try and alleviate that problem, and that is if you go on your computer and do a search through Windows and find in the Firefox folder a file called downloads.rdf. That's Robert David Frank. You find that particular file, take that, drag it to the trash, and then restart Firefox. That might take care of it as well.
Did you get that, Ken?
I think Ken may have ran over to the computer to do that. So that's good.
But I sure appreciate the help.
Okay, no problem at all. Give that a try, and if that resolves it for you, great. If it doesn't, give us a call back.
Call us back, and we'll try to something else, okay?
And what number should he call us back at?
It's 800-859-0957. Anybody out there can call us at that number. So, Ken, thank you very much.
Enjoy the evening.
Thank you, you too. Well, we appreciate that. That was a good one to start with. We've got lines open. So Jason will be next, but there'll be time to answer your question after Jason's. Well, Foster and Ed are off this week, but I'm here with Cal Carson, Amber Conville, and Justin Biel. And Justin, you were talking a little bit on the break about something that you've noticed.
Yeah, so everyone talks about how Google kind of keeps track of everything you do, and they're this eye in the sky watching you. But
that's true.
Yeah, they are. But you know, you can choose to take that as you want to take it. But
and sometimes it's good.
Yeah. So anyone who has an Android phone that's any recent or an Android tablet like the Nexus 7, 10, 4, you'll notice that when you first get the latest version of Android, was it Jelly Bean now?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You'll get Google Now, and it'll pretty quickly figure out where you live and where you work, or at least where you spend most of the time at night at and where you spend most of the time during the day at.
So if you happen to show up someplace at 8 o'clock in the morning two days in a row, they figure out that's work,
yeah.
Right?
So when I first downloaded it, I pulled up to Cengage 2 days in a row, and the next morning I got a traffic alert when I woke up, said, you know, drive time via 94 and 696, 1 hour to work. And I was like, oh, well, that's nice of you to do that. And then at 5 o'clock at work, it told me.
Somehow it knew you were going home.
Yeah,
but
somehow.
You're in IT, so it's not five. They should have figured out you're in IT and given
and
you
like
the
four. For me.
Yeah,
or
that'd
six.
Be really nice. I was just going to say, yeah, more like six or seven.
Well, see, you know, that brings up an interesting question if we could segue just for a second. Justin is for you who don't have radios that have TV screens on, Justin's a young person. He's probably in his mid-20s, right?
21.
Okay. That eye-in-the-sky Google-type feel doesn't bother you, does it?
No, not at all.
Okay. Why?
Yeah, it's convenient.
Okay.
And it's kind of cool.
So it's the convenience of all the options that it's giving you, you're willing to give up, for lack of what the old people say, privacy, in order to get those conveniences.
Yeah, and it helps me out if I Google something on my laptop and I say, give me the directions to Andiamo or something like that, and then it'll say, okay, and it'll pop up my phone 5 minutes later and give me the traffic to it and the best route to take and whatever else.
That's really nice. Hey, Amber, we won't go into how old you are, but you're certainly younger than Cal or me. Same question. Do you worry about Google spying on you?
No, it's okay. I mean, sometimes I think about it and it bothers me a little bit, but it's inescapable. And like he said, it's very convenient. So, I mean, might as well take the good.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I've heard a lot of people, my daughter's the same way. She's going to be 21 in a week. You know, she says, Dad, get over it, right? I mean, they always know what you're doing. So just get over it. Just don't do anything you're not supposed to, and you're okay. So
yeah.
I wish my son actually had that same attitude. Anyway, we should get back to the phones. Let's talk to Jason in Canton. Jason, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
How you doing?
Great. We're having a great time here. Hopefully we can answer your question. What can we help
you
with?
So I have a computer monitor that will periodically just lose signal completely. And I tried plugging it back in, check the wires, and it won't work. But the only thing that seems to get it to work is if I open the computer up take the video card out, you know, spray it with the aircon and put it back in. I'm trying to figure out what I can do to fix this.
Well, the first question I got for you right off the bat when you said you opened it up and sprayed air on it, that video card has a fan on it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Chances are pretty good the fan is failing on that card. What happens is that it's spinning along when you first start it up. When the chip on the card that it's trying to cool gets too hot and the fan is not spinning, then you lose your monitor. And then when you turn it off and it cools down again, it just comes back.
And especially if he blows condensed air on it.
Yeah.
Cool it down.
So one of the things that you might want to do is if you have a local computer store, not like a Best Buy or something big like that, but maybe a Micro Center or a mom and pop computer store, take your video card by there and say, hey, guys, do you have a fan laying around on an old card that you can stick on top of this one? Replace that fan, take it back, and see if that takes care of the problem.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's,
the only other thing I was wondering I've noticed that I discovered by accident a few days ago, if I tap the side of my computer, to the actual tower just slightly, it'll beep at me. Is that at all related to possibly, or?
No, that's just the computer saying, quit tapping me, it hurts. No, I'm just kidding. No, I have no idea what creates the beep sound for you. That is an entirely different trick. I've never seen that. Anybody around the tape? No, nobody. Everybody here is shaking their head like, I don't have a beeping computer.
I was going to answer the same way you did, Cal. I thought, you know, if it hits you and it, if you get hit, you might squawk too a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. The only thing that it might be, to be serious with you, is that when you tap it on the side, it may cause another fan, because the computer has many fans in it, it may cause that other fan to spin off balance and rub up against the side of the housing.
Okay.
So,
all right, well, thank you for your help.
No problem. Yeah, give that a try. See how that works out. If that doesn't fix it, then that means that you probably have a card that's overheating and the fan's not going to help it. Did you want to say something, Amber? Because I think you put your finger up.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you.
Okay. All right.
I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Cool.
Jason, thank you very much. Hopefully we helped a little.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Let's go out to Marvin in Southfield. Marvin, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I'm running Windows XP.
Okay.
Yahoo Internet Explorer is my browser. I keep a second email account at Google. When I go to Google to look at my mail lately, a window pops up that says, you are using an unsupported version of Internet Explorer. They give me two options. Install Google Chrome for free, or install Google Chrome Frame for free that won't affect sites that require Internet Explorer. My question is, can I have two browsers on my computer? I've got 2 gigabits of RAM and an 80 gigabit hard drive. I don't keep any music, any photos, any records or data. All I do is send and receive mail or occasionally browse the web looking up information on different websites.
Hi, this is Amber. You can absolutely have more than one browser. You should have plenty of space and RAM on that computer. Chrome Frame is a plugin for Internet Explorer, so then you would only have one browser, but you would be able to use Google Mail without that pop-up bothering you. But you can also, if you have both Internet Explorer and Google Chrome on your computer, that's fine.
So, what?
Okay, I'm getting the impression that if I install Google Chrome, that it might somehow, would that knock out my Internet Explorer or mess it up in any way?
Nope, it would just be, it's like a separate program that also accesses the Internet. Yeah. It doesn't replace Internet Explorer.
What you may be thinking of, Marvin, is that you really don't want to have two antivirus programs running at the same time. That would be a bad thing because they could conflict. But with browsers, you could have 4 or 5 browsers if you wanted to on your computer. You'd only use one at a time, but you could have them both open. You could have one open and then open up another one to go someplace else.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we totally re-engineer the wheel for you, let's ask this question. What version of Internet Explorer are you running right now?
8.
Okay. All right, then. So you're running the highest level you can run on an XP machine.
Right,
so
right.
The suggestions that have been given to you by Amber and the rest of the crew here would be the best course of action for you.
It's interesting because, you know, 8 is certainly supported for XP users. Why would Google be saying that's a non-supported? I could see if it were IE6, right, that's not supported any longer.
You know, a lot of frameworks and libraries for web development are actually cutting out support for any versions under 9.
Right.
So that could be
the reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I do download Chrome, will it then appear as a separate icon that I could access
yes.
when I desire?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Or else go to my regular Internet Explorer and use that?
That's yes. right. Thank you, Marvin. We're going to a break here, but hopefully we've helped you. You could also download Firefox, too. So you could have 2 or 3, and we do recommend that for testing purposes, even if you prefer one or the other. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back to answer your questions after this. And we're here with Justin Beal and Amber Conville. Sorry, excuse me, Amber. And Cal Carson and myself, Gary Baker. So we'll go out to the phones.
No. I got to tell you something.
Oh,
you
that's right. You know, I keep forgetting.
If I don't do this, they'll just whip me with Ethernet cables all night long. But every month the Mac Group Detroit meets over at the Birmingham Temple over in Farmington Hills, and this month is no different than any other month. We're going to be meeting again tomorrow on the 28th of April. At 3 p.m. And if you come at 2 p.m., we have our Genius Table open so that you can come in with your problems Mac-wise. Or, actually, they'll answer almost any question. And you can get, a resolution
free.
For free. Yes, your first visit. But tomorrow's meeting subject is going to be how to upgrade your Mac. And we have a Mac Group member. His name is Dave McGuire. And he'll come in, and he's going to show us different ways on how to upgrade your Mac. So you can save some money by coming in and seeing that sort of situation as well.
And so we're syndicated, and sometimes they're recorded and broadcast at a different time throughout the Michigan Talk Network.
This is correct.
So for next month, some people might miss this month. So for next month, is it always kind of on that same Sunday?
We traditionally have it on the third Sunday of the month,
okay.
But if you want to make sure and don't miss the meeting, what you'll do is go to internetadvisor.net, and we'll always have a link out there where you can get to Mac Group Detroit, which is at macgroup.org, and on the front page of the users group website, you can see all the information regarding when the next meeting's going to be, and if you click on the little link down there that says upcoming meeting dates, you can get the whole list of what meetings we're going to have for the entire year and the subject matter at those meetings as well.
And great, great content. So people that may be, a little farther away, it's still worth driving in that Sunday. And then there's all sorts of things you can do on this side of the state,
too. And if you can't drive in, we also have a link on there where you can link for our podcast that we do that you can also pick up on our website, and you can also get it through iTunes as well. And our podcast has the entire meeting on video that you can be able to see right online. So if you can't drive over and see us, you can see us anywhere in the entire globe, matter of fact, if you want to. So
the World Wide Web.
There's so many choices out there.
Sounds great. Okay, thanks, Cal. Let's go out and talk to Warren in Shelby Township. Warren, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. Warren, if you turn down your radio and talk to us on the phone, we'll be able to help you. That's about a 3-second delay just in case we say something bad.
Yeah, no, I have a question for you guys.
Okay, go ahead, Warren.
Okay, I'm sitting here watching TV last night. I get a phone call. I couldn't understand the guy too well. Evidently, he was Indian. He says, you've got Windows 7. We want to inform you that there's a virus in the computer, and we're going to help you. We'll fix it. I walk you through it. And I said, look, I'm not a computer guy. I don't have any personal stuff on my computer. I read my emails because I have to. And he's going on and 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 on. And I said, look, I don't have anything on there. I'm not a computer guy. I'll give it to my daughter. She can take it to her friend at work that's a computer guy. And then the phone went blank. So is there some kind of scam going on or what?
Yeah, there always is. And you were very smart in not following their suggestions at all. Unfortunately, this is a type of phishing. A lot of the phishing happens online, but this was one, a con artist was trying to get a hold of him on the telephone, wasn't he?
Yep. They'll call your phone and say, you have a problem. You don't know you have a problem, but you do have a problem. And you need to do this, and you need to buy this service, and then you need to actually, the more dangerous part of that is they'll install software on your computer where they can take control of it and put whatever they want on it.
Right? Well, the thing that gets me is I don't know how they got my cell phone number. I could understand, but cell phone, well, hey, I guess they can get anything, you know.
Yeah, they didn't care if they didn't know who it was they're going to pick up. They just dialed the number.
Yeah.
So they're just phishing, right?
Yeah. Well, like I told you guys, I'm not a computer guy. Yeah. My grandson comes over, screws her. I said, no, don't worry, Grandpa. I'll put it back just the way it was. I said, I don't even know how that was.
That's right.
So, yeah. I just wanted to lay that on you.
Yeah, you know, Warren, thank you very much for calling. It's something that when we have somebody like Warren that calls in and mentions this, then it gives us an opportunity to tell a bunch of other people.
Yeah, so maybe somebody listening, if it happens to them, they'll know what to do.
Yeah. So, know it will. Thank you, Warren.
Yep, you have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. And again, we're really excited that people like Warren, first of all, don't fall for the fishing expedition that these guys are going through, but then also will call and tell us about it, give us an opportunity to tell others about that problem. Let's go out to Joe in Livonia. Joe, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Call.
Hi, Joe.
Got a couple of questions. One for Cal, dealing with the Mac meeting tomorrow.
Okay, good.
The guy that's coming in, is he talking about older Macs or is he talking about much more recent Macs?
I think he's talking about, it'll probably be a cutoff point, I'm sure, somewhere down the line, but he's probably going to talk across a broad range of Macs. I would say anything that was purchased within the last, I'm going to say probably 4, maybe 5 years at the most, will be covered.
Okay. Different question. I bought a Mac Mini to try and get my taxes done. Went out to the Apple store. They set it all up. He set it up so that the Wi-Fi was engaged. When I got home and turned it on, it connected me to a site or to a link. And what I'm wondering, it turns out that it appears to have been the public library. Do they usually set their computers up so that they automatically bounce or cut people's communications out if they've been on for too long a period of time?
Not to my knowledge.
No, I would.
I mean, is that something that they can automate?
They can, but I'm not sure if they would. They may, but I'm not sure that's the problem. So help me again understand it.
Okay. What I have is I've got a Mac Mini with Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Okay.
Went on one night, and all of a sudden there was a connection for Wi-Fi. I went and did some homework, found out that it was located in the location, which happens to be the public library in Livonia, one of the public libraries in Livonia.
Okay.
So that's how I know what that is. But after I stopped using the computer that night and tried using it the next day, there was nothing there. I shouldn't say there wasn't anything there. It wouldn't connect. I mean, the site was still, right. I'm at the site, but the link was still there. The identifier was still there, still showed that it didn't have a lock on it, but it told me that it could not connect.
So this is not atypical. So what you're seeing is, does happen from time to time. Typically, when your Wi-Fi card will go out and look for any signal that comes in, it'll only pull up the signals that it can actually see at that point.
Right, sure.
For some reason, either there was some skip, there was something that caused it to stay on his list of potential Wi-Fi connections. Now, he couldn't get to it because it was way too far away, but it stayed there. Justin, have you seen that?
Well, yeah. And at night, you might be able to connect to things farther away from you,
right, because
for reasons of the sun actually interfering with your radio frequency. So that might be why you were able to connect to it at
night.
Well,
I've tried it at different times. I've also tried it early in the morning, you know, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm still not getting a connection. In fact, I'm getting a message, a dialogue box message, saying that it could not make the connection.
If you're not close enough to it, you
know. Well, I did as of, you know, the first time. I'm no further away than I was then.
But it's a combination of a bunch of things, including suns being down, sunspot activity.
Wind.
Right.
More than anything else, cloudiness and rain is the thing that will allow that signal to travel further than anything else. And if you don't have all those combinations together at the right combination, it's not going to work.
You know, one other thing it could be is the system administrator of the public library found that somebody's computer that's not in the library is connecting to their network and blocked your IP address.
Well, that was what I was asking, because I was trying to figure out what in the world happened all of a sudden. It was good and clean and solid, you know, and the next time was nothing. Actually, every time thereafter, there was nothing.
How far away are you, Joe, from the library?
I mean, you can see the library from my place, and there's nothing between me and the library.
Yeah,
so, you know, under 1,000 feet, I would guess.
Well, the other thing is that
go ahead. No.
The other thing is that your next door neighbor, their router could have got powered off and powered back on and came up as a access point as opposed to a router, and then just bounced the signal from the library within range of yours.
Okay, I don't quite understand that.
You know, I'll mention some more of it off the air when we have to go to a break real quick, and I'll mention it to you.
So I'm going to put you on hold, and we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and answer a few more questions leading up to the top of the hour. This is the Internet Advisor Show, and we're here to answer your questions for another 15 minutes after this commercial break. Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor Show. Let's go right out to Marcus in Detroit. We're going to try to get to as many of the callers that are on the phone as possible. Marcus, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
I have a compound issue. I have a disk read error at startup, and I also have random CPU spikes.
Okay, so if you're having disk read errors at startup, right off the bat, there's an issue that you're going to have to address first before you're going to be able to resolve any other problems that you have going on. Because if we're not reading the operating system or any other information from the hard drive properly, it can create other problems for you. So the first thing I would suggest you do is that if it will boot up and get the operating system up and going, get yourself some sort of external hard drive that'll plug to the USB port and copy all your data off if you haven't already backed it up. After you get that all backed up, then the other thing you want to do is figure out what type of hard drive you have in your machine. It'll be a Seagate or a Western Digital, and it'll say that when you first boot the machine up. Once you find that out, then what you might want to do is go to their website. You may have to go to another computer to do that and download their diagnostic program and have it check that hard drive out.
So you think there's bad sectors on the hard drive?
Without a doubt. Yep. And then if it says it's got bad sectors on it, then you need to replace the hard drive if you're capable of doing that, or getting someone to come in and take care of that for you, load your operating system back on, and then put your data back. And I think you'll be in good shape where it will probably eliminate a bunch of the other problems that you're having anyway.
So, Cal, sometimes there are bad sectors initially even, and they just label, the operating system labels it as a bad sector, doesn't write anything into that sector, and you can operate the hard drive for years with bad sectors as long as you don't have any content there, right?
Yes, but okay. The ones that are labeled like that are labeled down at the firmware level. He's seeing it when he starts up the computer, which means these are ones that are beyond that, and those are the ones that are critical.
And they're the ones that maybe turn bad after. So there was some sort of content in those sectors, and they turned bad because of after that content was put there.
Yeah, the content was put there, and so now the computer is going back to read that information. It's going like, I can't hardly read it. So is that helpful at all, Marcus?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so try that out, and I think you'll be in pretty good shape.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Marcus. Let's go to Frank out in Madison, Ohio. Frank, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
My problem is I've got 4 computers in my home and 1 wireless printer, and periodically, like several times a week, I lose signal, I lose connection between those computers. One's a Windows 8, one's a Windows 7, one's a Windows XP, and then I've got to reestablish the connection between these all three computers and the printer to the wireless by turning it off and then re-entering the web code. I've got to do that all over again, and it's driving me crazy.
So it's actually the connection from the printer to the router that's having the problem.
Printer to the router, the computers to the router, anything that's hooked up through the router, the wireless router.
So when your printer goes down, or when one computer can't see the printer, do all the other printers have the same problem?
I've only got one printer.
Yeah, when one computer can't see that that printer,
yes.
Do the other computers also have the same problem? They can't see the printer.
Yes, and I cannot get on the internet.
Okay. Now fun gets better. Okay, right. So here's the deal. Let me ask you this magical question: have any problem with power in your area?
No.
Okay. Well, I think you're having a power problem. Maybe not necessarily with the entire house, but definitely with the router.
Okay.
Or the modem that's coming from whoever provides your internet to you.
Okay.
So what you want to do is a couple of things. One, you could either the first thing I would do is go to a store like a Best Buy or your local computer store and buy an inexpensive UPS unit. You can get one for as little as like $69.
I've got one in there right now.
And you're getting failures.
I'm getting the symptoms that I told you, but the I'm not sure I got the router plugged into the UPS. So
okay, right. We got another viewpoint. Go
well. So how old is your? So when you say you turn it off and plug it back in or whatever, you're talking about the router, right?
You have to go to the icon and you got to right click on it and it says ignore this source or whatever and it kicks it out. Then you double-click on the wireless icon again. It brings it back up, and it asks for the web code, which you've got to enter. And then when I go back on to the wireless, everything's fine.
So we're trying to figure out if the problem's between the computer and the router.
Yes.
Or between the printer and the router.
Mm-hmm. I'm saying it's the router.
I think it is, too.
Yeah. How old is your router?
It's about a year old, less than a year. It's a Cisco.
It's a great router company. They make great routers.
Yep.
But I would probably consider doing one of two things. Number one, I would connect to the internet and download the latest update to the firmware for that Cisco router.
Okay.
Apply that on there. If the problem doesn't go away, get in contact with Cisco because I think your router's failing.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Frank. One thing they can also do, and I hate to recommend this from a Best Buy standpoint, but we've told people from time to time, go to Best Buy, get yourself another router. If that fixes the problem, that was the problem. If it doesn't fix the problem, you have 14 days, you take it back. So that also is another way to deal with that.
And periodically having to unplug and plug back in your router is also not, you know, terribly uncommon.
Right. That's a good point. Let's go to Tim in Westland. Let's see if we can get another call in here. Tim,
okay, thank you very much. I'll make it short.
Sense. Okay, thank you.
I heard there's an upgrade download where you get the start function that you had with all other Windows operating systems now with Windows 8, and it makes it a lot easier to run.
Yep. So there's actually, it's actually, you're running Windows 8 then?
I'm right. Assuming,
yeah, so there's actually piece of software called Start 8, and that is made by Stardock. It's actually a local company.
Yep.
So you can go. I think it's not that much money. It's on Stardock.com, I believe.
So that will give you the functionality.
The functionality
get the start
of
button
the
back.
Yep. The start button.
So,
the start menu.
Cal, you had three different commands that instead of using Start, because we want people to start we want people to get used to not having the start button. So, but there are three commands that are very useful, right?
Yeah, you can use the Windows key, hold down the Windows key and hit D, and that'll take you to the desktop under Windows 8. You hold down the Windows key and hit I, that'll take you to Internet Explorer. And then if you hold down the Windows key and hit E, that'll take you to Windows Explorer. So that's a nice workaround.
Yeah, but if you want to shut it down and go to shut the computer off, you want to go to the start function and then to shut off your computer. That's what I want it to do.
Or you can go to settings, and then it'll give you. And when you click on settings, it will automatically give you the option to be able to shut her down as well.
Okay, so you're recommending to stay away from the Stardust.
No, I'm saying that you do whatever works best for you. If you want to try it, that might work out for you as well.
You could do either or both.
Let us know how it works out, Tim. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You have a great day.
Yeah, certainly. We think that'll work. Hey, Michael, stay on the phone. Cal will give you some details about the meeting tomorrow. And for all the rest of you, we're at the end of our show. This is the Internet Advisor Show. I want to thank Annie Nichols, our associate producer, Scott Iannetta, who is our engineer. I got it right. Thank you. And Rich Luzinski, who is our engineer as well. These guys are the ones that help us bring our show to you every week from 4 to 6 here on WJR and on Michigan Talk Network on a number of stations throughout Michigan. Justin Beal and Conville, thank you very much for being our guests here.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisors Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.